Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 5 of the Football Absurdity Podcast. My name is Jeff Crisco. I'm here with Mike Valverde. Fresh off a trip to sunny Lake Tahoe. Was it good out there?
Yeah, I would say that it was sunny. We had a moment of rain for about 30 seconds, but for the most part, it was a little warm, more warm than we expected, but it's just beautiful out there with the lake and the trees and just the atmosphere. So it was well worth it.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous getaway. And I had like 30 seconds of rain too when I was working. And then my brother, who was in Sacramento this week, said he had 30 seconds of rain. So there was a very quick, very light rainstorm just making its way through Northern California, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. It just like ran right through and said, okay, here's a little rain for you guys.
Just it's because everybody was complaining about how hot it is. So they just said, all right, here's some drops for you. You know, don't complain about it. You could have rain. So, alrighty. So today is part 2 of our rounds 1 through 5 hot takes or bold predictions or however you want to call them. Before we get started, I just want to remind you folks, you can find us on Twitter. The website's account is at FBallAbsurdity. You can find any of the articles and podcasts that we do. They all pop up onto that feed, so you can see them there. You can follow me at JMKRISKO. You can follow Mike at RFL Red Zone. You can email us at footballabsurdity@gmail.com. As always, the Instagram that we have never posted to, never will post to, is at footballabsurdity. New thing with the website. There is a very wonderful independent resource that we are pairing with. It is called Beer Sheets. Beer Sheets is a custom cheat sheet that is tailored to the settings of your league. It auto creates tiers based off of your scoring settings and really helps you nail the draft. It's fully customizable and the projections are updated every week or so. So it's a great resource. It's huge on Reddit. We're pairing with the founder of Beer Sheets. He goes by Beer for the Beer God. We will be the exclusive home of Beer Sheets for the 2018 season. So it's a great resource. I love it. It's a real easy way to get a huge leg up on your league. So you can check that out at the website. Just the homepage, there is a link at the top. Homepage is footballabsurdity.com. So like I said, today is Mike's rounds 1 through 5 hot takes. Last week was my hot takes. So if you want to hear Mike just get absolutely disgusted with my round 1 hot take, you can go check that out. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Mike. Mike, you want to start with round 1, round 5 today?
I'm going to start with round 5.
All righty, round 5. So let's kick this party off. Let's get this started. So what is your round 5 hot take, bold prediction? Again, this is off of Fantasy Pros average draft position, 12 team league. That's where we're getting these numbers from. So who's your number 5 bold take?
So I went back and forth on this quite a bit, and it was I wanted to put him as the number 1, but just logically, it just wouldn't work out. And so I'm going to place him as my number 2 quarterback will be Drew Brees.
Drew Brees. Okay. Number 2. So you couldn't put him. So this is a well-reasoned hot take because you couldn't put him at number 1.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was a battle. I tell you, I really wanted to put him at number 1. But I just couldn't move Aaron Rodgers out of the way.
That's fair enough. So what made you think about Drew Brees as the number 2 quarterback?
So the biggest thing that I looked at of why he finished, I think, 9th last year. A lot of people want to think maybe it was his age, maybe it was because of the offensive line or whatever you may have it. And so I looked back and I just saw that the only real reason why Drew Brees wasn't his normal self was because of the fact that his touchdowns weren't his normal self. Mm-hmm. He had, I think, only 24 touchdowns last year. which, you know, is like 10 touchdowns less than what he normally throws, maybe even 15, depending on what year you're looking at. So it was quite a deduction in touchdowns. Now, so that keep me in wondering, okay, well, why did he have so many less touchdowns than he normally does? And I looked at the team, and what I could see is two reasons. Number one, the defense for the Saints was a lot better, mm-hmm. which means that if they're going to be ahead in games because their defense isn't allowing points after points, then they're going to be focusing on the run, which also led me to the fact that Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara had such great years. So I think those two things really tied into the fact of why his touchdowns weren't as high as they normally are, because Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara were running for touchdowns mm-hmm. and the defense not, you know, playing pretty well. So then you have to ask yourself, why, what's going to change? If that was the case last year, what's going to make a difference this year? And I think the major difference, one is I think the Saints are still growing as a defense. So even though they had a pretty good last year, you can't count on it this year. They still added players in the draft. It's still a major concern for them. So their defense is probably going to be either a little bit less or just the same. They're not going to be better. So yeah, you know, you can take it in either way. The main thing though, the main thing is the fact that Ingram is going to be missing up to, I think, 5 games or 6 games this year. And that's not even including injury. So if he gets injured, so all they have is Alvin Kamara. You're going to see the ball being a lot more in Drew Brees' hands because Alvin Kamara, a smallish back, isn't going to be able to carry the ball 200-something times this year. And without Mark Ingram, they're going to rely on him. So they can't just give him the full load. So they're going to have to give Brees some of that as well. So you're going to see him pass the ball a lot more. Therefore, his touchdowns are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Also regression, right? So you know he's not going to just throw 24 touchdowns regardless of the situation. He's going to throw more than that. So if you throw in, say, 4 touchdowns because of Alvin Kamara and another 4 touchdowns just based on regression, and or I should say progression since there's going to be more, then you're looking at another 8 touchdowns. So he's starting to get back to normal there. And I think that's the main reason. I think that Drew Brees is going to be the number 2 quarterback.
That's all very well reasoned. I do think there's a lot of good information there. I think Ingram is 4 games, though, but it doesn't change your point, really. A couple things on Drew Brees. I was looking at his stats from last year. He threw the ball 140 fewer times, give or take, than he did the year before. It was actually his lowest pass number since 2006, the fewest number of passes he's had in over a decade. So that right there drives a lot of what you're talking about with just pure just letting Drew Brees do Drew Brees things more this year. And, you know, the addition of Cam Meredith from Chicago, I think will help him step forward. I mean, Cam Meredith isn't a world beater, but he is a quality wide receiver. He can add some depth to that receiving core that they lost with, you know, Willie Snead moving on to Baltimore. But yeah, his 23 touchdowns last year was his lowest in New Orleans, actually. The lowest he had of his career was where he started 16 games was 17 back in 2002 for the Chargers. So it's been a while for Mr. Brees, and it's not like he had a bad year, because like you said, a lot of people were chalking that up to age. He did break Sam Bradford's record for completion percentage. His targets weren't exactly long, the depth of targets, but the net result was the highest of his career, 8.1 yards per attempt. So he was playing well, which speaks to your point, but he just wasn't throwing enough, because like you said, every time Kamara or Ingram carried the ball, it felt like it was for a touchdown. It was going to the house. So Drew Brees, quarterback number 2, pretty good hot take, just to give a little context on Fantasy Pros, where they take a look at every, they aggregate every expert's ranking. Only one expert has him as the number two quarterback. So you would be right up there with Davis Maddock from Fantasy Insiders if he ends the season as the number two quarterback. And right now he is going as the number seven quarterback off the board. So that's a huge value jump that you can get right there if you're loading up on your wide receivers, running backs in the first five, six rounds. You can go, or four or five rounds, you can go snag up Drew Brees in the fifth or the sixth, and you're cooking. If Mike's prediction comes true and he's the number two quarterback on the season, you are in an excellent position starting your team with four running backs and wide receivers and Mr. Drew Brees. So that's a great call, Mike. I like that one. So I won't try to talk you out of it.
And just to add to your point a little bit about his yards and his attempts, he finished, I think, in attempts, it was like ninth. So he was the ninth quarterback in throwing the ball. And then yards, he was, I think, third. So, which I think is an exceptional point about Drew Brees and his age. If his arm was getting less, then he wouldn't have as many yards as he did per ratio of his attempts. That you would see that sort of matching up or being less. But as you said, his yards per attempt were one of the highest in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So his arm is not getting weaker. It's just the fact that he had smaller attempts, and with the smaller attempts, of course, the yards and the touchdowns aren't going to be up where they normally are.
Yeah, everybody's talking like Drew Brees is falling apart or falling off a cliff. The man had over 4,300 passing yards last year. Right. Like, there are a lot of quarterbacks who would kill to even get within 500 yards of that, you know, even to top 3,800, which was Jared Goff had 3,800 and he was number 10 in the league. So just pure touchdown regression is going to do a lot of work to get Drew Brees back where he belongs in the top two, top three at the position. So that's a great one. So what do you have for round four, Mike?
So for round four, I have Jimmy Graham is going to be a top two tight end.
Oh, buddy, we are going to have words. You go for it.
Right now, I think he's listed as a tight end seven, which to me is ridiculous. Just based on playing alone, playing with Aaron Rodgers, and we've seen Aaron Rodgers in his career, how he loves to go to his tight ends, and his tight ends haven't really been all that for the longest time. Now he has one of the best pass-catching tight ends in the NFL in Jimmy Graham. So, you know, he's going to be looking for him a lot. Well, the other thing I like about Jimmy Graham is the fact that Jordy Nelson is no longer with the Packers. So that opens up a slot for more receiving yards and targets. And guess who they're going to be going to? Jimmy Graham. So I really like those two aspects about him. So his age, he's going to be 32 in November, which is you know, not something that he's spry on, but I think the Packers don't feel like it's going to affect him much. They signed him to a 4-year, $13 million contract. So obviously they think he has a long way to go in his playing time. Outside of Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb, there really isn't much there. They drafted a bunch of rookies, but I'm sure that if he has his choice between going to Equanimous St. Brown or Jimmy Graham, I think he's probably going to go to Jimmy Graham. So I think those are the reasons why I really like him. I think that there's no one better in the red zone right now as a tight end than Jimmy Graham. I mean, he makes his living down in the red zone, and you know the Packers offense is going to get a lot of attempts down in the red zone, so he's going to be scoring a lot of touchdowns. And you know, even though in his career his receptions and yards haven't always been great, I think this year is going to change all that. So it's hard, like I said, to put him as a number one because, of course, you have Rob Gronkowski right there, and he's sort of an immovable object because you just have to say, okay, well, he's not going to get injured this year, which he always does, and he's Tom Brady and all this other stuff. But I was really close to putting him in the number one, but because Rob Gronkowski and got to respect him as the number one, I'm putting Jimmy Graham as the number two.
All right. So I told you we were going to have words. I already put an article up on the footballabsurdity.com about how we need to have a conversation about Jimmy Graham's ADP, because there's a lot of banking on Jimmy Graham, the name, and not so much on Jimmy Graham's what he is in 2018. So a few things. I'm not even sure where to start. I have so much distaste in my mouth from or bad taste in my mouth from Jimmy Graham that I honestly don't know where to start. Few things. So found a great website today, ffstatistics.com. Wonderful website, great resource. One of the things you can look up at there is tight end finishes with a quarterback, or a wide receiver one finish with a quarterback, or a wide receiver two or three, or what have you. Basically, you can see what fantasy production different quarterbacks have garnered. Aaron Rodgers has produced two tight end one seasons, so two top 12 tight end seasons in his career. One was JerMichael Finley ages ago, and one was Richard Rodgers a few years ago. Richard Rodgers, who got something like 18% of his fantasy production for the season on the Hail Mary, 61-yard Hail Mary touchdown against the Lions to win the game. That was enough to put him into the top 10 tight ends, because tight end is a nightmare. So he does throw to the tight ends. They do get about, I think it's 17% of the target share, which is above average. He does throw the tight ends a lot. My only issue is with what Jimmy Graham is in 2018 and the other options on the team. So this is my take on the Jimmy Graham situation. I went back and I watched some Jimmy Graham cut-ups from 2018. He has maybe one skill left. He's slow. He's slow as dirt. And he had that patellar tendon injury a few years ago, and honestly, it's shocking that he's come back at all. But at this point, he's got one move left, and that is to shove a guy out of the way, be much taller than him, and catch a touchdown. And then I also went back and I watched a lot of Aaron Rodgers cut-ups from last year. And I'm sure it's not shocking to you that one of the things that stood out to me was Aaron Rodgers likes to run around and scramble a lot, which Russell Wilson did last year. That's what Jimmy Graham fed on last year, was the Russell Wilson scrambles. But when Russell Wilson was scrambling last year, he was looking for guys who were where they were supposed to be, sort of like not a lot of juking in the secondary, whereas Aaron Rodgers was going after guys who were sort of rolling out with him, running with him, adjusting their routes. So personally, I liked what I saw with Aaron Rodgers and obviously Davante Adams, but what he had with Geronimo Allison last year. There's nothing super spectacular about Geronimo Allison. He's a trendy sleeper right now because he's Aaron Rodgers' number two wide receiver, but there's just some sort of mind meld they had there where if Rodgers was in trouble, Geronimo Allison was where he needed to be. And Allison didn't get a lot of playing time last year. Most of his snaps that I watched were from just a couple games. So I think the only problem with that of him being number two is that, yes, they're going to be in the red zone a lot. Yes, they're going to score a lot of touchdowns, but I don't think they're going to Jimmy Graham. And another thing with Jimmy Graham last year is he led the position in touchdowns, which is great. He had 10. But he was also the de facto Seattle goal line back. because they only had, I think, four touchdowns from their running backs last year, which we talked about last episode. It was extraordinarily below average. So I just think the only problem with that hot take is that, one, I've already done a whole article about Jimmy Graham and about how that's not going to quite work out how people think. And two, I think with his touchdown production, the touchdown or bust, you could be right. You know what? You could be right. He could be the number two tight end when all the dust settles. But the problem is in 2018, he's going to be touchdown or bust. So what you're banking on is that the games that he scores a touchdown outweigh the number of games that he doesn't score a touchdown. And he just completely tanks your week because he only has like 20 yards. He didn't top 75 yards last year in a single game. So I think you could be right. I just think it's going to be messy, 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 messy getting there. And he's going to be so inconsistent that you're going to want to pull your hair out, because he could score two touchdowns in a week and then go 3 weeks without scoring a touchdown and get you fewer fantasy points in those three games than he did in that one, just because he doesn't do great in the open field anymore. He's just sort of stands up and snatches touchdowns out of the air. So as I talked it through, I think you could be right that when the dust settles, he could be number two, but it could be not a lot of fun owning him to get him there. So, sorry to have written a whole article about your hot take, but what do you think about the clapback?
I think you bring up all the points that were negative about him that I read up on, and I just like that Packer offense, and I think that with that Packer offense, it's going to be different than Seattle's, or maybe even New Orleans a little bit. And you're right about Allison; he's someone that is one of those sleeper guys that people just, you know, Geronimo, who? Geronimo, you want me to what? Jump? What? You yeah. know? So, I just, yeah, you're on. I'm not going to, I can't disagree with something that's prevalent, that's already there. You know what I'm saying? So, we'll see. I think it's definitely a mixed bag. I definitely think you could flip a coin and say, okay, well, here's this, he can do this, and here's this, he can't do that. I would be more than happy to take him as tight end seven, just because I think he's going to finish way above that, as obviously as I do. But I think at where they have him now as a seven is really, really low. At the very least, I could see him finishing as a tight end three or four. What are your thoughts? Do you think where do you think he's going to finish at as far as the tight end seven, tight end, or more than that?
Well, really? I think somewhere in the 7-8 range is probably good for him. And I'm seeing him as the tight end four being drafted, not seven, which is what I had an issue with, was him being drafted at a ceiling. I could see easily, just because of the nature of the position, just because it's so inconsistent, what you're looking for is somebody who scores a touchdown, they're automatically a tight end one that week. Or there's like an 80% chance of just one touchdown and gets him enough fantasy points to do that. So if you have a guy like Jimmy Graham, who we'll say he scores eight touchdowns next season, okay, which is more in line with his career average, outside of the 16 he had in New Orleans, which was one season, which was crazy. But say he gets eight next year. That could end up, like I said, a top three, top four tight end. But instead of like a Greg Olsen, who's getting you the same number of points every week, you know, at least 5 points every week from yardage, and then he chips in a score instead of, you know, 2 points, and sometimes he chips in a score from Jimmy Graham, he could end up a top three, top four tight end, but I don't want to draft him in the fourth round for that type of production.
And, you know, I think with Greg Olsen, the problem is there, and I looked at Greg Olsen as the number two, is the fact that, A, Carolina has so many more weapons now than they had in the previous years.
Yeah.
And on top of that, Olsen is coming off a bad injury. So I just don't think Olsen's going to get the ball as much as he normally does when it was just him and Cam Newton. It's just too spread for him to get the targets that he is averaging throughout the last whatever it's been, 6 years or whatever it's been since he's been Carolina. So that's why I threw that out the window.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, instead of Greg Olsen, let's look at Delanie Walker. He's sort of the same mold with Tennessee. He's just this boring guy who just gets you production week in and week out. And he had a down year last year, but the Titans were kind of a mess. And there's a new coaching staff in town. They'll stop doing the exotic smash mouth nonsense that didn't work. I would much rather, at the draft price, mind you, because Delanie Walker is going 68 overall. So he's going a whole round later than Jimmy Graham. I would rather have Delanie Walker personally, but who I would actually have if I'm looking at this Jimmy Graham skill set that you're talking about, where just a whole mess of touchdowns in a good offense, I think you can get a couple rounds later, you can just go snag Kyle Rudolph, who essentially does the same thing for Minnesota. Granted, the offense is not going to be the same. Kirk Cousins is very good. He's not Aaron Rodgers, but I think he'll have a greater role in the offense because there's just a whole mess of guys in Green Bay. Like, they've drafted 5 wide receivers in the last 2 years, and they drafted 2 running backs last year. And that's, you know, there's also Devontae Adams and Geronimo Allison and Randall Cobb and Ty Montgomery on top of, you know, the 7 guys in their first or second year that could be vying for touches and targets. I think it's just a messy situation, and he's being drafted at his ceiling, I think, is the problem.
Yeah, and I think Walker being in his contract year, and you have Geno Smith, who they drafted to replace Walker a couple years ago. I think those mediating factors, I think you're going to see a lot more Smith than you are going to be with Walker. I think they're going to sort of phase him out just because they're going to want to get this guy that they drafted last year some more playing time. So on top of his, I mean, he had an okay year, but it wasn't his typical season. It wasn't, so he was injured and stuff like that. So I think they're going to definitely phase him out, and I just don't like it. Where do they have him at right now?
Right now, for average draft position, is tight end number 7, pick number 68 overall. So about a little over a round later than Graham. And he's also the type of guy that falls. I think we talked about in the, the first or second episode where we talked about the unsexy guys who will fall further than you think they should. I think Delanie Walker is that type of guy. You could get him probably 8th round if people are sleeping on tight ends. So, okay. I mean, like I said, you could be right and I could be right, where it's sort of like the DeMarco Murray effect we talked about last week, of where he's just maddening to own and he gets all of his production in a small handful of games and he's useless the rest of the time. Which, by the way, speaking of that, LeSean McCoy did great work to blow up my bold prediction for him before the season even started. So thank you for that, LeSean. He probably will not be playing next year from all indications. So I'm already down one. So yeah, I think we put Jimmy Graham to bed. You come at me with tight ends, I'm going to tell you how much they suck. That's pretty much what I do with tight ends. So that was a good one. Some good discussion there. So what do you have for round 3?
Round 3, I have Allen Robinson. And if we have time to sort of step away from Allen Robinson for a second, I think two things. One, we should talk about LeSean McCoy. And two, I got a question about Andrew Luck and his prognosis, what we see as far as projection of him. So,
all right. Yeah, let's take a break before we talk about Allen Robinson. You want to talk about LeSean McCoy, who is facing some sort of league discipline this year, more than likely from a alleged domestic incident. Just have to put alleged there. There's a lot of he said, she said, but Given how the NFL is handling these things these days, probably going to be gone for summer all of the year. But yeah, we can talk about that, Mike. What do you think about that?
It's crazy for one. Two, if those allegations are true, and not only did, you know, I think at this point right now, I don't think he did. I don't think he beat her. I think he paid someone to beat her and get that stuff back. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint now just because it's so the evidence and everything is so circumstantial. But my take is that he paid somebody to go in and do that. But there's other underlining things in that whole Instagram post and the fact that he beat his kids, the fact that he beat his pets, the fact that he's done all these different things. And if any of that stuff is true, I mean, he's facing like a mountain of troubles, legal troubles that he may never see the field again. And it just makes me wonder how much is true and how much is just false or how much is anger or what it is. But it doesn't surprise me. He's been someone, if you remember right, he came out and just called, I can't remember the name of the coach, called him racist because he traded a couple
Chip
of
black Kelly, people. Baby.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, I won't go into the police, his police views, but, you know, he had a lot of that based on very little evidence. And, you know, just stuff like that, where to me, he just has shown his and then what did he do in the locker room one time where he they lost, I think, and he like went off in the locker room and just different things like that where it's just like, wow, you know. So I'm not a big fan of him.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy hasn't always been had the most squeaky clean of reputations, I think we'll just say. Like you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of allegations in this Instagram post, and it feels kind of dirty to be talking about this from a fantasy football thing, you know, but what are you going to do? We can't ignore it. But if even one of the allegations turns out to be true, just one of them, they're all, well, steroids isn't heinous, but it's something that the legal discipline, they're all such heinous acts that, like you said, he may never get another snap in the NFL because of this. So it is one of those, like I said, dirty things that talking about in a fantasy football context just makes me feel itchy. But there's not everybody in the NFL is a good person, and that's something that we have to deal with. And not everybody in the world is a good person. But at the same time, there were some pretty bad allegations against 49ers Reuben Foster earlier this offseason. My personal belief is I believe the victim first because they have some sort of evidence. Whether or not every detail is true is something completely different. But the Reuben Foster allegations turned out to be completely false, which personally I think is the exception rather than the rule. But if even one of the allegations in this Instagram post are true, he's done. He's gone forever. And I don't think that's completely undeserved. If he did do the things alleged in the Instagram post. So, but at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that happened with Adrian Peterson. Talent does overcome a lot. And if there's anybody who's close to the talent level that Adrian Peterson was, when his allegations came out, it would be LeSean McCoy. Now, Peterson's career has never been the same, really, since he came back. I think he had one good year, but he hit the wall father time undefeated. So we could be facing the same thing with LeSean McCoy. But I think that's all I want to talk about the whole LeSean McCoy situation. So you mentioned a prognosis for Andrew Luck. So what's going on with Mr. Luck and his super wonky shoulder that doesn't seem to ever want to heal?
Yeah, so I think everything is on schedule. It seems like his shoulder is holding up. And I just really think that if if his whole his shoulder holds up for the whole season, you're looking at a typical Andrew Luck type season. I think that his yards are going to be a little bit down than what you would come to expect. But I think his touchdowns are going to be pretty on par. The reason why I think his yards are going to be down is because of the fact that he's not going to throw the ball a whole lot in the beginning of the season. I think you're going to see the running game just so he can get back into the swing of things and the live action and those type of events. And, you know, preseason will do that a little bit for him, but there's nothing like live first week of the season. Those kind of things are heightened way more than a preseason game. So,
yeah, you have guys actually trying to knock your block off in the first regular season game.
Yeah.
So you think that he could start off slow. And so that would potentially, what I'm thinking, create a buying opportunity for itchy owners.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And that's a great question or a great statement.
Yeah, and then so week one, two, they start off again. Do you know who they start off against?
Good question. No, I do not.
Let's check that out. They start off week one of the regular season against the Bengals. So kind of a average defense, nothing too spectacular about them. They have some guys, but more or less just one of your inconsequential defenses, nothing to be worried or bump them up about. So right now, Let's take a look while we're talking about Andrew Luck. Right now, he's going as quarterback 11, 93rd pick overall. So do you think that's a good range for him, given that you think he'll start the season slow? And if you do draft Andrew Luck, what are you thinking for drafting another quarterback to go ahead and make sure that you miss out on this slow start? So are you willing to take him there? And if you do take him there, are you going to think about maybe backing him up with another player?
I think it's smart to back him up with another player just due to the fact that you're talking about his shoulder. And that is almost comparable to, I would say, a running back's knee. And you just never know what's going to happen as far as shoulders go, just like you don't know what's going to happen with as knees go. So I think it's really important that you back him up with another quarterback. And how I would do that is looking at the Colts bye week, whatever that is, and seeing someone who's being drafted at, say, the 15th through the 20th quarterback, and seeing what bye week they have in comparison to Andrew Luck. So if you have Andrew Luck, say his bye week is week 8, and you have, say, Mitchell Trubisky, who's playing the Cleveland Browns in week 8, that would be a good person to draft to supplant Andrew Luck just in case something happens, just because he has such an easy team on the bye week. So what you want to do that is a little bit more long-term and see, okay, what are the games Andrew Luck is playing? And what are the games that, as I mentioned, Mitchell Trubisky is playing? And if they match up pretty well, where Luck could be out for a while Mitchell Trubisky has a stretch of 4 to 5 games that are pretty simple, then that's the guy you want to target. And I would do exactly that. Also, another idea is to draft Jacoby Brissett. And as we saw last year, he played a full season. And you know, yeah, he had some rough passes. He threw a lot of interceptions, but he had valued through the run, his mobility, and he played pretty well. And I would say given another year, he's going to be even better. So I would look at those two options.
And I think your first example, Mitchell Trubisky, I think that's a good option for you can carry two quarterbacks. If you start off with Trubisky while Luck works his way back in, and then in Luck's bye week, Trubisky plays probably the new title holder of league's biggest dumpster fire in the Buffalo Bills week 9, which is going to be Luck's bye. So if you snag Luck at pick 96, you can go ahead and find Trubisky, who's going as the 26th quarterback off the board, pick 166, which means he's not even getting drafted in a lot of leagues. So I think that's a pretty good pairing. It could you know, if Trubisky doesn't take the step that we hope he takes, and luck sucks, sorry for the rhyming, but if luck sucks, we could be in a situation where you're ditching both your quarterbacks. But quarterback, you know, outside of two quarterbacks leagues, is a pretty fungible position. So that's like a double home run swing, but they sort of counterbalance each other, taking two swings at home runs instead of one swing. So Trubisky, who I think was off the top of your head, is actually probably the best candidate to go with Andrew Luck if you're trying to find somebody going late that could cover for Luck and has a big upside.
Yeah, and he does. I mean, he definitely is multi-talented and can do it all. A lot of people are comparing him to Alex Smith, which I don't really see that too much. But I think he has a better arm than Alex Smith does. But we'll see.
Who knows if he has a better arm? They wouldn't let him throw the ball last year.
Yeah, I know. That offense was just garbage.
Oh, my God.
I don't even understand that whole thing. But, yeah, you're right.
I mean, there's a reason why John Fox got fired. The Bears, you know, they took Trubisky. They traded up one spot to get him to take him number two overall. And then the Bears had the lowest yards, the lowest passing touchdowns. They just didn't let him do anything. So it just didn't make any sense. And so that's why John Fox is out. And so hopefully he takes a big step forward this year. But Mr. Trubisky does have what on paper might be an early or a rough early schedule, but maybe not. He starts off with the Packers, who, remember, they took two cornerbacks in the draft. So very high up. So they may have a defense that takes a step forward this year. But then they have the Seahawks, who... Seahawks are on the way out. They're the, you know, the Legion of Boom is dead. Everybody's gone. They're going to be a mess this year. So that could be a shockingly good matchup for him. And then you have the Cardinals and Bucks to start off the season before his bye week. The Bucks have a great defense, but by week four, you'll know what's going on with Luck. If you're taking Luck week 11, you should be making that switch from Trubisky to Luck if Luck is anything, you know, like he was before. So I think that that'll be something that he can, Trubisky can sidestep, or you can sidestep by playing Luck instead of Trubisky that week. So speaking of Trubisky, you mentioned your number three hot take had to do with his big money receiver that they got this year, Allen Robinson. So what's your hot take about Mr. Robinson?
So I have Allen Robinson as a top 10 wide receiver.
Woo, buddy.
And
top 10. So he's is he above DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah, right. He might finish above DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes.
I know you like that.
You heard it here first, folks.
And I'm going to give you complete credit if DeAndre Hopkins does what you think he's going to do, because right now as we speak, I've completely soured on him. I refuse to take him. So
what? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you got me.
Wow. That's crazy. I was just speaking out, I was talking out of my butt.
No. No, you convinced me on that one. And so, yeah, I'm like I was on, you know, I was on the Hopkins train like no other, cuz I was almost fell out of my chair when he told me that he wouldn't finish as number 3 receiver, and I was just like, you know what? But yeah, I think you're right.
Hey, man. Well, it's good to hear. So, what's the path to Allen Robinson, top 10 wide receiver? I want you to convince me, like I convinced you for DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay, so number one, we have to look at who he's played with and what he's done with who he's played with. So obviously, he's played with Blake Bortles, and he's finished as a number 4 receiver 2 years ago. So last year, of course, was or I should say 3 years ago. Last year was a complete wipeout. And I think up to that point, he had a couple receptions and something or what. But
he went out in the first game. He injured his knee in the first game and was toast. You ready for the stat line? All righty.
Sure.
One target, one reception, 17 yards. So he had 17 more yards combined than you and I did last year.
Yeah, which is a good thing. I would hope so. And I think he went out like in the first quarter.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad. And Blake Bortles came over and he's like, I'm sorry, Alan, and slapping his torn ACL knee. It's just, so that's how bad Blake Bortles is. Okay.
Blake Bortles is not a doctor.
Yeah, no, not at all. But the year before that, of course, was a disaster. We'll just throw that out and you can blame all Blake Bortles. But the year before that, 3 years ago, he came on and finished as the fourth receiver in the NFL. Or
1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, which is a very nice round number that makes me it looks good to see, 1,414.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be top 10 numbers easy in this year alone. So the talent is there. Even if you go before Blake Bortles, you're looking at in college, you're looking at he made Christian Hackenberg a super stud who, was drafted. I can't remember where he was drafted at.
Second round, Christian Hackenberg.
So, now it's like, who's that guy? So guess who made him a second round pick?
Allen Robinson. Exactly. I see what you're doing.
Now you throw in who's the quarterback now, as we discussed, and that's Mitchell Trubisky, who has probably more talent in his little finger than both Blake Bortles and Christian Hackenberg combined. And if they open up the offense and let Trubisky do his thing, guess who's going to be the beneficiary of that? Allen Robinson.
Trey Burton,
yeah. Hey, don't get me started on that guy. I might go for a while on that guy because I like that guy.
Me too.
So now, if you're thinking, well, what are the Bears? I mean, why would you bring someone who has an ACL tear, did nothing the year before? He's got to be worth pretty much nothing, right? Well, the Bears are like, no, we like him. We're going to sign him to a 3-year, $42 million contract. We like him so much. So obviously they don't see an issue with him at all. Then who's the competition? Who's going to take away from what he has? And the only person they have there now is a rookie wide receiver. You can't really count on Kevin White because that guy is always out and hurt, and his career is pretty much over.
Oh, wait, hold on. Breaking news, Kevin White. He tripped, fell, and shattered his entire body while you were saying that. So,
exactly. On a popsicle stick.
Exactly.
And with Trey Burton, as you mentioned, which is a good point, who's probably going to be the number two receiver, is that's going to be more beneficial because it's going to allow Allen Robinson to do his thing, but it's not going to take away so much from him that it's going to hurt. So it's not like having two or three different receivers on that team that, and then you have your number one. And so the number one's going to be catching, 75 balls while the other two are catching 45 and maybe 60.
And yeah. It's a different situation, quality tight end versus quality wide receiver in terms of the amount of target share that's going to go to them. So that makes a lot of sense. They can both be good.
Exactly. And he has great size and solid hands. So I see him being someone that's going to be used in the end zone quite a bit. And they're going to target him quite a bit down there just because of his size and hands. Now, I don't know why I made that note, but now I know why that made that note, but we already covered that. So yeah, that's why.
Okay. I like that. My only question is, like I did with the DeAndre Hopkins, you don't have to go as in depth. I outlined who is going to rise up over him. So he's number 17. And these are the guys ahead of him in average draft position. So at 16, I'm going to go 16 down to 10. So you've got Josh Gordon, Amari Cooper. That's a freaking joke. Stephon Diggs, T.Y. Hilton, Doug Baldwin, Adam Thielen, and Tyreek Hill. So from what you've told me, I could see a world where he does end up leapfrogging all of those guys. Especially if, for example, Luck starts off slow, like you said, that means T.Y. Hilton's going to start off slow. If Kirk Cousins struggles with the offense in Minnesota, that knocks Thielen and Diggs down. If, you know, John Gruden doesn't save Amari Cooper this year, that's a problem. If Josh Gordon does Josh Gordon things, the bad Josh Gordon things, that he's toast, well, then that's easy. And Tyreek Hill does a simple regression, and boom, you're sitting there. There you go. Allen Robinson, if he gets back to, let's say 1,210, that could get him into the top 10 if those guys all take a step back. So I like that. That's, you know, I do think, personally, I do think that their rookie wide receiver, Miller, I think he'll do a little bit more than you're giving him credit for. But at the same time, you know, this offense should be much better than last season, like we talked about. I think the pie might be big enough that, you know, there might be 1,212 for Robinson, but then there's still 18 receiving touchdowns to go around for everybody else. You know, Matt Nagy should be able to put together a pretty quality offense on the heels of what he was able to do with last year with the Chiefs. So he had a career. He gave Alex Smith his career year. You know, we can see what he can do to Trubisky. So I like that one. That's a good one. I like that. Allen Robinson, top 10. Currently, he's number 17. So we got to get to your last two, but I do think we got to speed up a little bit here. We're starting to run a little long. So what do you got for your second round hot take?
So my second round is that Joe Mixon will finish as a top five running back.
Joe Mixon, top five running back. Okay. Convince me. Show me your work.
So his offensive line was horrible last year. This year, they're going to take a step up, which, of course, offensive line is going to help him develop and get through the holes. And, you know, as offensive lines do, the better they are, the better blocking you're going to get in front of him. I think that also not will only help Joe Mixon, but it's going to help Andy Dalton become below average, you know. So not average, but below average of the average. I also think that because Jeremy Hill's gone, Giovanni Bernard and him are similar backs. That is going to take off a lot of stress on Joe Mixon and allow him to be sort of the number one running back in there. And I think Giovanni Bernard is sort of going to take a back seat to Mixon. At least that's what they're going to focus on. Now, it's all on Joe Mixon to do this. So if he can't, then Giovanni Bernard is going to take over. The one thing that really stood out to me about Joe Mixon and why I say that is because last year he started off slow, but he was a rookie. By the end of the year, he was really hitting steam, and that showed me a lot. That showed me that he's gotten used to the league. He's gotten used to the pounding. He's done his homer. He's on it, and he's becoming a better football player. With that said, there's two things. A, he has great hands, knows how to catch the ball. B, he's big enough to carry the ball on first and second down and goal line and short yardage. And obviously Giovanni Bernard is not. So with that, all that said, he's going to stay on the field a lot longer and is a bell cow back, which there are very few teams that actually have a bell cow back. And because of all those reasons, I believe that Joe Mixon will break the top five.
Interesting. Okay. So it sounds like you don't trust Gio Bernard to take touches from him, like we talked about with Jordan Howard, that Tariq Cohen was going to steal touches from him. So you think that by season's end, Joe Mixon is going to solidify his grip on that running back one role and ride it all the way to top five. Okay. So I'm looking here at Marvin Lewis's coaching history. It would be his first top five running back that he coached in his first top 10 since, looks like, since 2005. So obviously the flotsam and jetsam they had there, I think there before Jeremy Hill, there was Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, just a whole mess of bad backs there. So so Mixon, personally, I'm not convinced. I do think Gio Bernard's going to take more of more touches than you think he will. I think he's going to play spoiler a little bit. But I do think people are giving Gio Bernard maybe a little too much credit for what he'll produce, but I think he'll get the touches. So I'm going to respectfully disagree with you there. Also, I'm not a huge fan of Joe Mixon, especially since last year he and Bernard, Mixon had a lower yards per carry than Bernard, which isn't the be all end all, but they were running behind the same line. So that does give me a little bit of pause, but that's the kind of hot take, bold take that, you know, we're looking for. That's what this is about, you know, sort of plant your flag sort of deal, because I talked nonsense about DeAndre Hopkins and I still think about how much nonsense that was, but it's not crazy to see. Same way with Mixon. If he snags onto this role and takes a step forward, he could be top five. You know, let's see. He's going as this quarterback or running back 16 off the board. LeSean McCoy is ahead of him. We'll call him running back 15. I mean, 10 guys could get hurt.
Wow. So I take it that you're definitely against that whole idea.
I'm not convinced. I do kind of think that I want you to show me something before I put my faith in you, and you're taking the leap of faith. I like it. Like I said last week, I think my angle that I look at things is everybody is bad until you prove otherwise. So I just think what I saw from Mixon last year, I'm not convinced. You know, there's a lot of running backs that going from college to the pros don't pull it off. Trent Richardson comes to mind. Mixon's a very different back, but at the same time, I kind of throw draft and college evaluation out the window coming into their second year just a little bit. So we'll see. I like the call. It's the sort of thing that we're looking for here. Mixon is a top five back. So before we go to number one, we can recap this real quick. So we've got your round five is Drew Brees is number two quarterback. I tend to agree with that. I think that's a good one. He will have some positive regression this year. Jimmy Graham is going to be a top two tight end. That's some trash nonsense that you need to get out of here with. Let's see. Allen Robinson, top 10 wide receiver. That's a good one. There's definitely a world where that happens if he gets somewhat back to just his production a few years ago that he had with Blake Bortles. And this one, Joe Mixon, top five. So what is your next hot take?
My next and last hot take is that Saquon Barkley will be a top 15 back, which means he's going to fall.
He's not going to be as good. I was going to say top. I was scratching my head because I was going to say, well, he's going running back six. So where's the hot take there? So you're saying he's tumbling. He's finishing behind guys like Hunt, Fournette, Gordon, Cook, Freeman. You're putting them all the way back at 15, huh?
Yep. Exactly. Right.
Show your work. This one I disagree with. So I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. So the biggest complaint that I have, and it's probably the most important complaint, is the Giants offensive line sucks. I mean, S-U-U-U-U-C-K-S sucks. And without an offensive line, what good is he going to be? So not only are you dealing with that, then you're also dealing with the fact that he's a rookie. And it's a lot more than just skill. Yeah, he has the skill. He's like Joe Mixon a little bit, where he can catch the ball, he can run with the ball, he can do kick returns. The guy has it all, right? Mm-hmm. So that's great. But that doesn't match up with having to digest how quick defensive players are, how to maneuver and manipulate defensive backs with your eyes, how to just do all the different things that come with being a veteran. And I think the Giants are going to take him slow. They're not going to just throw him out on the field and say, you're our savior. Do it all.
Fix it.
That's just way too much for a rookie running back to take on. And when he got drafted, I tweeted that this is going to help Eli Manning more than it's going to help Saquon Barkley. And what I meant by that is that Saquon is going to be a sort of dump off type of running back where Eli Manning's in trouble, they're going to dump it off to him. And by doing that, that's going to bail him out. So I just don't see the rushing yards. It's going to be hard for me to see the Giants doing anything offensively just because their offensive line is so bad. And, you know, who do they have other than Odell Beckham and Evan Engram? You know, it's really – even Evan Engram is not, you know, all that. So I just don't see a very good offense. And I see troubles with him being a running back, a rookie running back, and gaining yards and scoring touchdowns. So that's just going to be – a total negative on his point production. That said, I think he's a great, great talent. There's no doubt about it. So it's not based on his talent. It's just based on opportunity.
So it's situation that you disagree with him going in the top seven. And, you know, I was thinking back to a couple years ago with Zeke Elliott, coming into the league and him being a first round pick. And, I was vehemently against it. I you know, I'm not gonna draft a guy in the first round who has as many NFL carries as I do, you know, that I wasn't gonna make him the cornerstone of my team. Obviously I was wrong. There were other factors there. Great offensive line, one of the best we've seen in recent history. Decent offense around him. I mean, Dez was still Dez at that point. He wasn't a husk of himself. And then what we didn't expect was Dak Prescott to be not only the starter, but kind of come out hot out of the gate, which are all factors that helped Zeke that are working very far against Saquon Barkley. You're right. They got Will Hernandez in the draft, who should shore up the offensive line, but they lost Weston Richburg to your San Francisco 49ers. But that's sort of that's an upgrade, but it's also a downgrade at the same time because they're losing Richburg, who was he was hurt last year, but he's a decent offensive lineman. So one quality lineman does not an offensive line make. And I believe they got Solder from the Patriots, but he's more of a pass blocking specialist, and he's also getting up there in years. I don't trust the guys that the Patriots let go. We'll just put it that way. So, and then at the same time, the weapons around him are questionable. Odell Beckham, not questionable. Incredibly quality wide receiver. All anybody knows him for is that one crazy catch, but I mean, he's a lot more than that. Quarterback. I mean, Eli Manning, his best years are far behind him, and they weren't that good to begin with, if we're being completely honest. So there's a lot of parallels to what I'm seeing people say about Saquon, to what people are saying about what we're saying about Ezekiel Elliott, and at the same time, what people were saying about Leonard Fournette, that they were all sort of the same caliber of back. But I mean, the Jags had a decent-ish offensive line last year, but they didn't have the weaponry to take touches away from Fournette, if that makes sense. You know, they didn't have good alternatives to pass the ball to, instead of giving the ball to Fournette, which gave him a bigger portion of a smaller pie. That would be the offense, because the Giants offense, I think, will be pretty good this season. Not great. They'll be, you know, somewhat league average, and that will probably limit the opportunities for Saquon Barkley. So personally, I think he can overcome all that, probably because I got burned talking out against Zeke Elliott talking a little too spicy. But I do like, you know, outside the top 15, that's a, or outside the top 14, 10. Where do you see him ending? You said he's a top 15 back, which means he's tumbling out from the number 6 overall running back that he's going now. But where do you see him falling in that 6 to 15 range? What do you think?
I think 15.
You think 15? Oh, wow. That is, there are going to be some very angry Saquon Barkley drafters and some very angry Giants fans if he ends up there. But I mean, you showed your work. It does make a whole lot of sense. I just can't, I can't co-sign it because I'm not getting burned again like I did with Ezekiel Elliott. I can definitely see it. I think this this is happening because of how great the rookie running backs were last year. I mean, you've got four of the top 10 running backs by ADP this year were rookies last year. Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook. So I think Barkley is getting that inflation that you saw rookie wide receivers get after the Odell Beckham year, where that class of wide receivers was just amazing. Mm-hmm. So I think you're seeing the same thing with running backs. So personally, I'm not taking, I will own zero shares of Saquon Barkley because he'll never go in a place where I'm comfortable taking him, which would probably be the second round or the very end of the first. But him falling to 15 does make a lot of sense to me. I do like that one. It probably was not a hot, too hot of a take. So I need you to start over and we'll delete this whole recording and you come back with a new number one take. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
No, I like it. It's good. It's a good hot take. I like it. It's adequately spicy because that man has a lot of buzz around him right now. So, so I like it. So any last defense of Mr. Saquon Barkley falling outside the top 14 running backs before we wrap this bad boy up?
I wanted to touch on a little bit more of Fournette too, about sure. that. Yeah, I think you're also dealing with a team that with the Jaguars is all about defense and running the ball.
Correct. So yes.
That obviously fits Fournette's skill set. With Giants, they're more a passing offense than they are going to be a running offense. Now, I think they're going to probably be more running than they have been in the past few years just because they have Saquon Barkley and not whoever back there. But
Paul Perkins.
Yeah, Paul Perkins and Orleans Darkwaugh and just you name the hodgepodge, you know. They also, what's interesting is they have Wayne Gallman, and I don't see him. I mean, obviously, he didn't have a great season, but he's also someone that's going to be in a second year and, you know, has a drive, and we'll see how well he pans out. He could definitely take some time away from Barkley. And it's just, it's just hard for me to say exactly that because of all those different aspects of the Giants offense that he's a top 5 or 6 pick of all things, you know. Just I'm never going to own him, obviously, because of where I value him at, but I wouldn't want to own him either.
Yeah, it's hard to draft somebody like that at their ceiling, and that's what kind of you're seeing with Saquon Barkley. There's not a lot of his downside baked into his average draft position. So all right, well, I think that'll do it. You know, top 5 round hot takes are in the bag. You did them this week. I did them last week. Some good spicy takes on 10 players. Since we did first 5 round spicy takes, you want to hop straight into round 10 through 15 deep sleepers next week before we start our division previews the week after that? Sound like a plan to you?
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, I hope everybody appreciates the bonus content of the production meeting here at the end of the podcast, but I think that'll do it for us today. For Mike Valverde and the whole Football Absurdity team, this has been the Football Absurdity podcast. Please, if you've come this far, you listen to us ramble on for over an hour, please go to iTunes. Please, you know, rate, review. Would love to have some stars next to our name. Would be pretty awesome. So thanks everybody for listening and have a good one.